So I will go ahead and call to order the meeting of the TRPA EITPO committee. The date's Wednesday, September 22nd, and it is 9:30 a.m. So the first item on the agenda is the roll call. Mari, I understand you're handling roll call and public comments. So Mari, if you could do roll call, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Faustinos?
Present.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Ms. Hill? Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Ms. Novosel?
Happy to be here.
Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Terrific. Thank you, Maria. So now bear with me. We'll go over the meeting rules for the day because we're doing this virtually. First, to observe and participate in the meeting, please go to www.trpa.gov, select September 22nd, 2021 Governing Board meeting on the calendar, and then follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. Second, to participate in the EITPO committee meeting with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the GoToWebinar platform at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you'll be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the Environmental Improvement Public Outreach Committee. And if you have contacted TRPA for reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter that PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you are using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it is opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you are joining via the call-in number posted on the TRPA website, please note that this is just a listen-in only option. If you would wish to address the committee, you will need to log in via the GoToWebinar on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, or dial the unique PIN number. And then lastly, committee members, I think you know the drill after a year and a half. Please alert me via the chat function if you are online or want to speak up. Set the chat box to panelists and organizers so that I can see your message. And then please just use the chat function to indicate a desire to speak and not have sidebar conversations. So thank you for that. And then the next item is the approval of the agenda. Staff, is there any changes to the agenda?
No change, Mr. Chair.
No changes. Awesome. So then the agenda is now approved. That takes us to agenda item number two, which is the Transportation Funding Initiative briefing and possible direction to staff. Information can be found on page 41. There's a short paragraph of what we're talking about today. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Julie to introduce the consultants and let us know where we are in the process. Thank you.
Terrific. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Julie Reagan, Chief of External Affairs and Deputy Director at TRPA. And at this meeting, I'm the Acting Executive Director. Joanne, as you all know, is out on medical leave. She had her hearing surgery last Thursday. It went very well. Her surgeon is pleased. She is recovering. We sent her beautiful flowers from all of us, which made her day, and she's just resting and recuperating as planned. So she sends you all her best. So I'm going to kick this item off before we turn it over to our consultants from RGS. I just wanted to give a little context. We've all been working so hard on transportation funding solutions for a number of years, and many of you have been working on this for decades. This is a long-standing challenge in the basin, and it really feels like the stars are aligning for us to make some real headway on transportation. Yeah, a dog that's barking at a squirrel here. Pardon me. So let's look back and look forward. We've been at this bi-state transportation consultation for about 4 years. That's a long time. It sounds like a lot. But think about what we've made in terms of progress. We've actually identified regional transportation priorities and come to consensus around that. we looked at a 10-year action plan for funding. We agreed on an actual need of a minimum of $20 million for transportation revenue, new revenue. In the process of that, we updated our regional transportation plan, and we agreed on a new VMT standard and new fee structure. So these are some pretty big policy achievements in the last couple of years. And then a very large nut to crack right now is how do we solve this $20 million regional revenue need, minimum $20 million. So we've done some hard work, and it's even getting harder. And we said at the last meeting that that may be the lightest agenda, the easiest committee meeting that we've had so far as a group. So the work, it's time for us to roll up our sleeves more. We're trying to arrive at a consensus around a regional revenue plan and come together, you know, in terms of a path forward. We heard it loud and clear from our congressional delegation at the summit in terms of transportation and infrastructure requests. They want us to have a unified vision. They want to have one consistent voice for Tahoe and not multiple and competing asks, because state and federal funding are certainly a part of this solution, as we'll cover in the presentation. We have some deadlines. We have a report and a presentation and a report to give to the Legislative Oversight Committee in Nevada by the end of the calendar year. We have the board and your leadership is on the hook to deliver new revenue by 2023. That was the agreement made with stakeholders, with the California Attorney General's office, as part of the decision on the VMT, the new revenue will flow into the basin in just a couple of short years. So we are under pressure to find a solution. But I'm very pleased to report that our consultants have done a very good job of building on the excellent work that's been done over the course of many years to identify new revenue solutions and to get us on a path forward. Now, what you're gonna hear today needs further vetting, it needs further analysis, but we are giving you the unvarnished version of what we've heard from key stakeholders and participants about new revenue options. There are legal and political feasibility questions remaining for all the things we'll be discussing, and more analysis, as I mentioned. But I feel like we are moving the ball forward, and with your leadership and your support, you know, we can take this to the next level in terms of collaborating on solutions for transportation for the lake and for our communities. So I just appreciate, Mr. Chair, the chance to kick this off. I know you have worked very hard, and everyone on this meeting agenda to move the ball. We heard it at the board retreat. Urgency is on us. We need to take some action. So let's use this time today to go through where we are in the process and then hopefully come to some next steps. So with that, I'll just turn it over to the team at RGS. I believe Bob and Josh are on the program here, and I thank you for the time to kick this off.
You bet. Josh, any intro remarks?
Thank you, Julie. I appreciate the context. Very, very helpful and the recap. You know, I guess, Josh, if you're doing the presentation before you start, a couple of questions for you. I know we might be time constrained. So the first question is do you need to have committee members hold off on asking questions until you're done with the presentation? Or do you want to have set breaks during the presentation, or do you want to just be interrupted?
Yep. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. It's nice to be back here. The good news for me is my colleague, Robert Spencer, has signed up for the bulk of this presentation, but I will say that we designed the presentation to have points where questions can be formally taken. There is a, you know, it's some pretty weighty material, so I think the plan is that Bob will process through, and then there'll be two points where he'll ask for feedback and questions. If we can get there, that would help us get through the time frame. So thank you, and then I'll pass it to Bob, unless there's anything else, Chair.
No, so thanks, committee members. Just sort of wait for those breaks, and then we can have a discussion at those times. And then I guess secondly, is the presentation materials up on the TRPA website for the public? If the public's out, you know, kind of following along or listening.
They should be. They were. I'm seeing them here. Let's see. I'll have to ask staff. Is staff online that could answer that question, or I'll double check.
Yeah, we'll double check. I'm sure they are.
Terrific. Awesome. Well, with no further ado, Josh or Bob, go ahead and looking forward to the presentation.
Okay. Great. This is Bob Spencer. Nice to see the committee again after such a tumultuous month. Glad everybody is safe. And I know there may be more immediate concerns regarding recovery efforts on your minds. I'm hoping that we can take a little space today to talk about longer term issues, basically around realizing the vision of the Regional Transportation Plan. So can everybody see the slide in front of them, the EITPO committee meeting slide for Tahoe Sustainable Transportation Initiative? And if I'm if I'm controlling this, then I'm going to see if my cursor moves things along. And I think everybody should be seeing August presentation recap. So we're going to start there. And as Josh mentioned, I'll take a break at the end of when we go through the funding, the revenue strategy, and we'll get your feedback.
Hey, Bob. So, Bob, sorry to interrupt here, but what I'm seeing is a slide that doesn't have any content on it other than this picture of a traffic jam. So
yeah, Josh, bear with me. Okay. I'm holding folks in suspense, I hope, to keep their attention.
Okay.
So what did we do last month? These policy drivers, Julie's already mentioned them, SCRA. I would think of it in terms of two general questions we're trying to answer here, two general policy issues the region has to come back to the state with answers for. What are the regional revenues we're going to authorize? And that's going to be the bulk of our presentation today. We're going to introduce what we've been calling the governance and administration question, which is what's the structure to adopt, collect, administer those revenues. I think these two work streams can be handled somewhat independently. They don't necessarily depend upon one another. What revenues you collect are one thing about enabling state law, et cetera. Who collects them, how they're approved, and who has control over them is largely a separate issue. So we're going to focus on the first one today, but introduce the second one. We have to answer both of these by the end of the fall, by the end of the year, to get our report back to SCR, to respond to Senate Concurrent Resolution 8. We also reviewed last month interview results. We answered some data questions. We raised some of the governance administration issues. So now this month, what I want to do in the presentation today is review where we are now with the revenue strategy. You know, what's possible? What are we looking at? That's going to be the bulk of the presentation today. We also have some information, if the committee is interested, if the discussion goes there, on priority projects. And it's good to remind ourselves that as much as we're talking about new revenues today, when you roll something like this out to the public, of course it's about the projects you're going to fund. Of course it's about the benefits. It's about realizing the vision of the RTP, maintaining the health of the lake, maintaining the ability to have, maintaining mobility around the lake. So it's important to keep, you know, the reason we're here in the back of your minds, protecting the beauty of the lake, while we get into these very thorny revenue issues. And those priority projects are part of that vision. Then we're going to introduce the governance and administration issue today. We're going to dig into that more deeply next month, but we just want to touch on it today to keep that ball rolling and to possibly get some initial feedback from committee members if we have time. And then we can end up with reviewing our process and timeline. Okay, so where are we now? The revenue strategy, based on the interviews that we did to kick this project off in August, early September, concluded that there's currently insufficient support for a base and entry fee. And that with that, the conclusion that no single source is going to be large enough to fill the funding gap in the RTP that we're trying to address here, the $20 million per year over 25 years. So we're going to have to look at a multiple source strategy, not unusual in long-range transportation plans. So we're starting from that point today. On the governance administration, coming out of the interviews, there was a desire for understanding of the need for more revenue, but not a consensus on exactly how that would get structured. So we're going to have some pretty meaty discussions here on this second stream of work on governance administration. Again, we can, I've got a slide on that today. We can touch on that, but we'll really dig into that deeply next month. You know, because if not a regional source, then are we just pursuing, you know, the status quo where regions maybe raise their own strategy, jurisdiction by, I mean, the jurisdictions raise their own strategy. One by one, the TDD does what it can with its limited resources, you know, on a project by project basis. So we still need to grapple with finding consensus around that. So let's now dig into the revenue strategy. I want to highlight the environmental improvement program here because that's a story that has, you know, it's got success. It's demonstrated benefits to the region, and it's been built on the participation of all sectors. And I think that may be a theme, something that we want to carry over into the RTP, that we had local, regional, state, federal funding, all participating in that, all having skin in the game, as the sports analogy goes, demonstrating that everybody is part of this effort. So maybe there's a story there that we need to carry over into the revenue strategy. For the priorities, we did do some surveys on this, a survey you may remember from last month. We're looking at revenue sources that are sustainable, meaning continue over time, fungible, they can be used for capital or operating, they're transparent, meaning it's easy for members of the public to see where the money's coming from, where it's going, and there's equity involved. And equity has different definitions, but clearly there was a sense that, say, between residents and visitors, or between local jurisdictions or among the states, that there is a or by income level, you know, that all plays into this notion of equity. And then we added a fifth, that, you know, to be worth the effort, we'd like to try and generate at least $1 million a year from any single source in order to have a chance of meeting that $20 million a year gap. So now I'm going to dig into some more, dig in a little deeper here, and I'm going to present a couple of what we think are some of the key options for the committee to consider. These recommendations are based on both fulfilling those priorities that you saw in the last slide, as well as our experience with regional transportation funding, our understanding of state and local fiscal finance on both sides of the state border. So this is our best shot at options that you might want to consider. And then I'll be getting your feedback on these once I get through the other slides. So bear with me on this, and we can come back if you have questions. Sales tax, tried and true. Everybody knows the term self-help counties, at least on the California side. This is the dominant regional transportation revenue source throughout the state of California. It requires a two-thirds vote of the local area. In this case, we would look at, when I talk about voter approval, I'm talking about basin voters, and we would have a way legally to segment out basin voters to do that. Interesting to look at different rates here, current rates by jurisdiction. Washoe and South Lake Tahoe, due to their recent 1% increase, have the highest rates, you know, lower rates in Douglas, Placer, and El Dorado County. Placer, El Dorado, I know that 7.25 rate, that's the minimum statewide rate at this point. So any sort of transportation self-help tax in any other county in California anyway is on top of that 7.25%. If we added a half cent, that would generate $1.6 million a year. Now that's basin-wide. But again, we're talking about multiple revenue options here. Maybe this is an option that's appropriate for some of the local jurisdictions or one of the local jurisdictions, but not for everyone. So that $1.6 million, we can break it down by jurisdiction if the committee would like to see that. Second option, again, these aren't easy. I grant you, these are heavy lifts. This is going to the voters. This is standing behind your expenditure plan. This is being confident that we're going to deliver benefits. So I don't mean to make this a cakewalk in any way, but this is the reality in California and I believe in Nevada that to really generate substantial new revenue, a vote of the people is pretty much always required. TOT, transient occupancy tax. You can see the rates here, by jurisdiction. I'm going to see if I can get rid of my control screen so I can see the whole slide. Again, interesting. There's variations around the lake. Highest rates in Douglas County, lowest rates in Placer and El Dorado. Although, again, it's important to remember what locals are already contributing. You know, a chunk of the TOT revenue in Placer, in eastern Placer County, is already going to transportation. So that's their local contribution. So just because the current rate is low doesn't mean you're not already contributing to transportation in the basin. The 5% increase in this revenue source basin-wide would generate $2.7 million a year. Not insubstantial. In fact, somewhat significant. So
half percent.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Josh. 0.5% increase. So not an insignificant source of revenue should the basin decide to pursue it. Last one I'm going to touch on in terms of taxes, property transfer tax. Now, this is not a commonly adopted revenue source. It is an option on the California side. I'm not familiar with the Nevada side, for charter cities to adopt their own property transfer tax, again, with a majority or two-thirds vote, depending upon the use of the funds. And you can see in the it's interesting, on the California side, the rates are actually quite low. There are no voter approved increases in these rates in the counties or South Lake Tahoe. South Lake Tahoe is a general law city, so it doesn't have the charter city option, and counties don't have that option either. So really, there would be definitely would need some statutory enabling act to enable on the California side this revenue source to be tapped. The Nevada side, it's already, you know, you can see quite a bit higher. If it were increased basin wide, if you added $1 per 1,000, so that's in finance terms 10 basis points per property transaction. That's 0.1% of the value of the property transaction. Again, not an insignificant source, $2 million a year. And we can break that out by jurisdiction if the committee's interested. And then finally, on the local regional side, and let me say, I'm using local/regional because I know a lot of, the county folks on the committee, you know, look at these as local revenue sources. And I realize that we are trying to reframe at least maybe in some way, maybe some increment of these revenue sources as a regional revenue source. So that would be part of a regional pot, not something just kept locally. So I'd say we're in the middle of this transition between local, regional, what's local, what's regional. There are some fee options. We have discussed a zonal transportation user fee with the chair. And although the basin entry fee may have insufficient support at this time, there may be sufficient support for a zonal transportation user fee. This is a user fee that is paid at certain boundaries around the lake between zones. And the initial concept here is you would only pay it if you move between zones. So if you just drove within your zone, traveled within your zone, there would be no fee. It's when you cross that border that there would be a fee, like into Emerald Bay or something like that, there would be a fee. And maybe the fee would vary between residents and non-residents. There's a lot of details here to work out. Another fee option, parking fees. We've started doing a deep dive into parking fees. On the one hand, we know that we're going to have to start charging for parking simply to provide a revenue stream for the construction and maintenance of park and ride lots, which are a key component of any transportation solution in the basin, where you give people a place to park and have very good links, connections to transit from there. Whether parking fees could generate, if you will, additional revenue for capital and possibly transit operations remains to be seen. But there could be some there. I wouldn't look to it as a significant revenue source, but it's one that definitely needs to be tapped. And then finally, development impact fees are on here, not because they meet the $1 million a year threshold by any means, but simply because they're an existing fee that TRPA imposes, and they are updating to a mobility fee, and which will increase the fee slightly. So, I mean, already with that action, which I believe will be happening in the near term by the TRPA board, there will be some additional revenue. So there's already some move towards increasing the regional revenue pot, albeit this is probably the smallest piece of that. So that's the local regional side. But you know what? We've got to, we wanted the committee to be clear on what we left, as we say, on the cutting room floor. There's a number of options, other options we could look at. Happy to discuss these when I get to the Q&A. We can come back to this slide. People would like to revisit it. Those aren't the only options. Those are the ones that we're looking at now that we would recommend the committee to consider. But we want to make sure we're not missing anything. We want to make sure we're all on board on what we're considering, what we're not considering. So we can come back to this slide during the Q&A. But again, let's remember, this is a multi-sector. Everybody's in. Everybody joins together to solve this revenue issue. So let's look at state revenue options. What can the state do to help out? There's on the California side, there's park user fees. There's grant eligibility requirements that could be tweaked to ensure that Tahoe is competitive, and just simply help with project support, getting projects, grant applications through the pipeline and approved on the state side from California. With Nevada, same sort of thing. Park user fees. I gather Nevada may be a little more prone to direct budget appropriations. That may be the more common history there. EIP bonds are a possibility. They have not been issued to date. And the same support around grant eligibility and projects. And let me make a note about grant eligibility and where we're, we're all, why the regional, the state, the federal, even all linked together here, is that California gives preference to counties that have passed a self-help sales tax. There's preference in tapping state and federal funding that flows through the state for transportation if you've adopted a regional revenue source. So, we have already an example on the California side anyway of where if the region steps up, the state will step up. On the federal side, we have a federal transportation bill that's going through reauthorization. We also have the same, so there's lots of opportunity there. There's the potential really for about a 25% increase in existing programs, leading to possibly $1 million per year for the TRPA for transportation. So there's some real additional potential funding there that could come through the reauthorization of the bill. There's also some new programs in the bill which line up very well with the basin's priorities around climate, around electrification, active transportation. So there's a lot of potential here in the transportation bill, but we still have the same, we'd have the same request from the region to our congressional delegation around improved grant eligibility. Let's make sure those eligibility requirements don't unfairly penalize Tahoe, which in many ways needs to build more like an urban transportation system, even though it's in a very rural area with a relatively small resident population, because, of course, the high visitor load. This third bullet on the regional side, we need to coordinate our grant request. The region needs to come together and make sure that when they're requesting or putting grant applications in, that they're coordinated among the jurisdictions so that you're ensuring you put your best foot forward and you're not duplicating and you're not competing against one another. And all of this, of course, requires congressional delegation support. So I'm going to wrap up here and then open it up for Q&A with the private sector options. The private sector has a role here to play as well. There's already support for microtransit. There, the employee sort of employee access to work sites in the basin has become a critical issue. We've learned from some of our interviews because, of course, as the cost of housing has gone up, workers have moved further away, and so they require some way to get into the basin. And that has really been a pain point. That's a current significant pain point for employers in the basin is enabling worker access. So there's a role for transit to play and possibly a critical role and maybe a role for the private sector to participate in that, and other voluntary contributions. So I'm going to stop there because I know that was a lot to take in. And I'm going to ask just to open it up to the committee now for a Q&A.
Terrific. Thank you both Bob and Josh. I don't see anybody in my chat, but I see hands. So I will start with Belinda. I see Belinda's hand first. Go ahead. I think you're on mute, Belinda. So while we're having technical difficulties, I guess the second hand I saw was Alexis. So Alexis, you have a question?
Yes, I'd like some further explanation on why the basin user fee is completely off the table for this discussion today.
Why is it off the table? The states, we got absolutely no support from it from the state delegations.
Meaning the governor of the state of Nevada or?
That's correct. I mean, we did not interview the governors directly, but their direct reports in our interviews cited that there was no support for a basin entry fee.
Okay. And do we know, as far as the timing, is there no work that can be done to clarify these concerns before we completely take that option off the table?
Well, I would say it's at the political level now. It's at your level. I mean, if members of the committee think that there's an opening here, would like to try and reopen that discussion, I think it's at your level where that would have to occur.
Agreed. I didn't know that these discussions we were having these discussions with the governor, and I've asked to meet with the governor to discuss this because I'm concerned about some of the other options and whether they would work for Washoe County. So I just wanted to make sure I got that on the record that I don't know why we're completely taking that off. I had also heard there was some legal concerns about the basin user fee. Is that also something we need to work through?
Yes, thank you for bringing up legal concerns. We're in the process of engaging a law firm that has experience on both the California and Nevada side of the borders with municipal finance issues. In fact, have been involved in basin issues directly. There are some questions I have, not so much about, about how the fee could legally be adopted. And I'm not sure, at least from my experience on the California side, that it could be done without a popular vote. Even though it's called a fee, just look at the bridge tolls in the Bay Area. Those had to go to a majority vote to be increased, even though they're a toll, even though they're a fee. So I imagine the same thing would probably occur here. And then how the fee, how to ensure that we can defend it against being a tax. And if it is a tax, does that also affect, approval, voter approval requirements? So we need to look into that, but I wouldn't, so let's hold on that, and we're going to continue to dig into that. Yeah.
So it's not off the table.
Well, we're looking at it in terms of the zonal. We're looking at the legal question in terms of the zonal transportation user fee, which is basically would have to run through the same kind of legal analysis as a basin entry fee. So we're looking at it from the perspective of a zonal fee. I think if the committee would like to bring the basin entry fee back onto the table, I would encourage you to pursue your own conversations at your level to do that.
What's the difference between the user fee and the zonal fee?
Well, the basin entry fee, as you remember, would be charged at the gateways to the basin, the 6 or 7 gateways to the basin for everybody going coming into the basin. The zonal fee would be charged in the basin at boundaries between zones. So think as you're driving out of South Lake Tahoe towards Emerald Bay, that might be a zonal boundary. As you're driving up the West Shore might be a boundary. As you're driving from Tahoe City to Incline might be a boundary. And I know in the prior study, the concept was you would not pay a fee if you didn't leave a single zone. You'd only pay it when you crossed a boundary. So that's the distinction.
And we think that those would be easier to implement.
Well, I'll be honest, we did not test the zonal fee with the state delegations. They were very focused on the basin entry fee and making it clear that that needs to come off the table. With the zonal fee, we would need to pursue exactly how that would work and whether we could get support for that. Yeah.
So Bob, I'm going to interject here. Thank you. So I want to kind of clarify and ask a question. When you say off the table in my conversations, this is the consultant's recommendation in trying to find a feasible revenue source in the time period that we need to do that. So I understood our conversations that it's not necessarily a black and white binary thing or whatever. It's just, you know, based on your research and recommendations that it's just an area that might not pay off. Now, that may or may not be true. And I will, just from my personal observations, you know, Alexis was asking about zonal fees. You know, there have been a lot of questions, and again, I'm just speaking on the Nevada side for a couple of years now regarding, you know, how does this fit in with the Constitution? How does it fit in with Article 9 of the Constitution, Article 9 of the TRPA Compact, the various NDOT regulations? And I think before deciding whether it's something feasible or back on the table, I do think those questions really need to be answered because there's a bit of fatigue going on that while there could be a lot of merit behind this idea, that there's questions that need to be answered. And, you know, certainly a lot of concerns from local folks in the Carson Valley. I think TTD and TRPA both heard it from Douglas County regarding concerns of, you know, just having to pay a fee to drive shortly into the basin. And I think that might be why the zone fee kind of raised and resonated, because it sort of maybe tackles that head on about how to deal with those short trips into the basin as opposed to long trips around the basin that actually increase VMT. So anyway, I just wanted to interject there, because I'd like to kind of focus on, you know, kind of start diving in a little deeper, because it feels like we've been talking on the surface of this. So, you know, those are the questions. So I guess, Alexa, your question, like off the table, I don't think we're looking at things as on or off the table. These are the consultant's recommendations with a very short time frame on a huge issue, and what they see probably has the best possibility of bearing fruit. That's how I heard the presentation.
Yeah, Jim, thank you for interjecting that and reminding me that the top of that revenue slide said initial, and right. And that is important, that we're talking about a 25-year plan. Just because something like a basin entry fee may not be on the table now initially, it doesn't mean that it couldn't be on the table in the future. And maybe experience with, if we can tackle something like a zonal fee, which be using similar technology, maybe, you know, gaining experience opens up that option down the road. So Jim's right. These are our recommendations related to the very short time frame we're under now to get a report back to the Nevada legislature. Not to say that any one of these that may not be considered now could be considered in the future. And just one more thing to echo Jim's point about the legality on the Nevada side. We do need to dig into this state constitutional issue of whether we could characterize the fee as not a toll and violate the Nevada state constitution, but make sure we can characterize it as simply a transportation fee. So that's a legal question still outstanding.
Yeah, I would add to that, Bob, there's fungibility issues with the Constitution regarding revenue collected off of public roads and where they can and can't be spent. But exactly. I'm not the attorney, so somebody else can dig into that.
Yeah, it's restricted to only use in maintaining the roadway on which the fee is charged, yeah. Right? That's the constraint.
So with that, and I know we're on, you know, a little bit, I love the conversation, and I want to make sure that all the committee members have a chance to speak. And those, so, and I, Belinda, I haven't forgot about you. So go back to Belinda, and then Cindy, I saw your hand, and I saw Bill's hand, but we'll see if Belinda has, and Sue. We'll just go to everybody. So Belinda,
hey, Jim.
Did you get your mute issues?
I'm using my phone now for audio, so hopefully you can
Perfect.
Hear me now.
All right.
Okay, great. So my question is, and I know we probably heard this figure previously, but just if you could refresh my memory, Bob or anyone else again, what percentage of the $20 million need is actually for capital costs versus operational costs? I think it's really important to understand what things state grants and other capital sources will pay for versus operational costs, which, you know, typically that's where local revenues that are more like taxes or fees can be used to cover operational costs. So I think it's important for us to understand, you know, what some of those benchmarks are when we're looking at these various funding sources and what they can actually pay for.
Yeah, thank you, Belinda. I can give you the general answer there. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips. Just as you said, this regional source is to cover what is not coming down in terms of color of money, as the phrase goes, from state and local and other sources, which are primarily capital sources. So you need a regional source for a couple of major reasons, a couple of key reasons. One is for that transit ops piece, ongoing sustainable transit operations. That is typically the cash starved piece of any transportation system, and that's where a regional source is needed. So that's an ongoing operations related piece. And then the other one on the capital side, you need the regional source for that match. Almost all these grant programs require a match, these capital grant programs. And so the regional source is the match. And finally, the regional source is just the, if you will, the oil that keeps the machinery going, just keeps the planning going, keeps the public committees engaged, that is not to be discounted, a source to keep the lights on and keep the RTP moving forward in the most, you know, in the broadest sense. So, yeah.
Okay. But you don't know exactly what that proportional share is. Is it?
I don't, I'd have to turn it to the staff.
I think be really important for us as we get into these deliberations to understand, you know, where these sources of funds have to come from. And that, you know, to me is a good way to make a decision. And I'll just make another point is that I think that in the presentation was really clear that identification of projects is really important. And I would just stress that over and over again. I mean, people, I think, you know, most of us, you know, if we can see that there is a benefit and we articulate that strongly from the beginning, I think we'll get more support at, you know, both the elected and local community level. So I just, you know, having gone through such a measure here in LA County, I mean, that's what sold it, you know, is that the, you know, the payees felt like they were getting, you know, their projects funded and that it was going to result in some very tangible local benefits. So I'm just cannot stress the importance of that enough.
Yeah, we've got some slides on that if the committee would like to move to that, but totally appreciate that.
Yeah, and thank you, Belinda. One of my questions as well, so I really appreciate you asking that, because I do think it is important to differentiate, particularly the strong need for transit operations, since that's the one that's really difficult to really get the funding for. But we do have new parking fees going on on the East Shore and the casinos. And so I am kind of curious on, at some point, we'll not answer it today, but like the East Shore parking fees that help pay for the operations there, is that considered an existing source, or is that now a new revenue source to get to that 20 million? I know it's small and doesn't make a dent, but I think it matters to have consistency in how we talk about these things. And so it'd be, I would be interested in follow-up information on how we're treating that revenue there. Let's see. So Cindy, please. Good morning.
Thanks, Jim. And Bob and Josh, thank you. I know you've spent a tremendous amount of time on this. And I think many in the basin have, including myself, have been working on these issues for many, many decades, and looking at some of the funding streams you're talking about. Specifically with sales tax and TOT that you raised, and I'm sorry, I didn't add up all the numbers, but we have to get to 20 million a year. And so those two sources, what were those numbers again as to what those would raise?
Yeah, it was on the sales tax side, if there was a basin-wide increase of half a cent, that would be 1.6 million a year. On the TOT side, a half a percent increase would be 2.7 million a year. And on the property transfer tax side, a $1 per $1,000 of transaction increase would be about $2 million a year.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So let me just go through a few things that we have worked on, at least in my years of both volunteering and now working with Placer County. So we did a polling just 3 years ago on sales tax for transportation initiatives, and it did not reach the two-thirds. It wasn't close to two-thirds with our local voters. And that was for many of the types of projects we're talking about. So we took a different strategy and got our business community to do a T-bid. So when you show those numbers for Placer County, we're 1% higher on sales tax through the T-bid assessment. So it's really 8.25% people are paying when they purchase something. Mm-hmm. And then the TOT rate with the T-bid in the basin is 12% already. So it's important to know that. Now, what are we doing with those funds? The business associations have replaced about $4 million of TOT that we've committed to housing and transportation. We did look at real estate transfer taxes, but primarily we looked at that for housing, for affordable housing. We thought that was the best nexus to property tax, property transfer fees, and we were told there was no way to do it legally. The county could not do that. We do have the authority in Placer County because many, many years ago, we got legislation in to allow us to collect a separate sales tax in our region. I don't know if El Dorado County has that, but it's very difficult to get portions of counties getting a sales tax passed. But again, legislation is a possibility to allow us different types of authorities to do that. But I think it's really important, and what I felt all along is that the nexus needs to be the problem and the funding source being linked. And that's where, of course, I'm biased, or not biased, I think I'm pretty well informed that the basin user fee does capture those day visitors and provide them a service that they can directly benefit from. Many times locals don't see transit as benefiting them because they need to run five different errands in the course of 15 minutes if they're like I was when I was a young mom. and so you can't depend on the transit system where visitors can. And by providing that free and frequent service as an alternative, I've always felt we were addressing the equity issue that way, but certainly very concerned that we've got the California AG telling us to raise $20 million regionally, and then our governor saying, well, we can't support a basin entry fee, and that shuts us down. We haven't seen any major project get underway in Placer County yet. Tahoe City Lodge is broken ground, but is still struggling for financing. Homewood, how many years have we been talking about it? So I'm concerned as we look at new projects in VMT and getting shut down that we don't have real solutions. And no offense to the work you've done. You've recaptured and restated many of the things we've heard and struggled with, how we do that regionally. But there's a big picture here that I think we were all ready to go and start working on. And I agree with many of the comments Alexis made that we need the opportunity to really have candid discussions on the problems, how we address any issues with entry fees or cordon pricing versus these other efforts that we already know are going to take several years to get legislation and then get our voters to vote for. So thanks.
Thank you, Cindy. Want to go to Sue, and then I'll go to Bill and Haley. And I do want to, we do need to be mindful of time, I think. So, yeah. Sue, please.
Thank you, Jim. And I'll try to expedite it by saying ditto to Cindy. Thank you, Cindy, for bringing up those issues. Sales tax, TOT, any of those will have to be passed, obviously, through voter initiatives, some sort of voter approval. So therein lies the issue. Again, it's just as big an issue as a user fee. And I am disappointed that we're not talking about user fees in the mix of this, because as far as our local governments go, it's all the same process. We all have to get approvals and go through basically the same issues with our voters. And the voters don't want to pay sales tax, frankly, for tourism type of transportation. To them, the TOT makes more sense than what I've talked to my constituents. And yet, it's still a difficult conversation. And I am disappointed that we're not going to keep the user fee as a top priority, because I really do feel that, yes, we've got a lot of hurdles, but we have a lot of hurdles no matter what we talk about. And I do feel it's the way we need to go. We are, and I don't know if you knew this, but we are a charter county. So we may be able to do something regionally as far as the property transfer tax rates. But I will tell you that we had a lot of comments, not pretty, from real estate and developers saying they did not want us to go there when we brought this up as a possible solution for some of our other issues in our county. We have a very low tax rate in our county because we have a lot of opposition to tax rates and tax increases. So it's a difficult haul no matter what. And I would hope we can keep the user fee process moving forward, because I was disappointed to hear that our governor was not supporting that. That's a surprise to me to hear that. And frankly, I think that is our that could be a regionally the best process in what I'm seeing and hearing. Just throwing that out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Really good comments. Bill, I see in the chat and you have some comments or questions, so please go ahead.
Hi, Jim. I share Sue and Cindy's concerns, and I appreciate what Belinda said. I'm trying to figure out how we thread this needle a bit. And I think I go back to what Cindy said. We've started off with a great deal of work that got us to the point that we came up with an agreed upon priority list, which we can't afford with the existing way that Tahoe is treated and getting funding for these kind of transit oriented projects. And so if we continue to be treated as a local government or a region or something within these governments, we're never going to make it because of the competition within those formulaic processes that are out there. And so my hope was that we would set forth why we have these as our priorities and what we're trying to solve to protect Lake Tahoe, protect the unique recreational experience at Lake Tahoe, and also to enhance the economic opportunities for the communities that surround Lake Tahoe. That's why we came up with these priorities. And there's a price tag that we don't meet. And to me, that's like, it can't be any different than when California built a Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, it wasn't an entry fee that brought Marinites into San Francisco. It was a bridge toll. It was a user fee. Same thing for all of the express lanes that are now all around the Bay Area. If you want to pay the fee and get to work a little bit faster, you pay the fee on the fast track. So I understand there's some political issues with the term entry fee. There's a lot of issues regarding, what's the fairness between people that have to come into the basin to work versus the tourist, and who's going to have to pay the fee, and on top of the parks fees and all the other stuff that, but the reality is if you put up what we need to build our facility, the way we think we can do that so that the user will see there's some advantage here of not using their car, then they would be paying for this thing as, and also for us to expand it as users get more into it. But that would, to me, be simply no different than when I go through a bridge to get to San Francisco, that I'm paying the fee to cover the cost of the Carquinez Bridge or the Golden Gate or whatever it might be. And I think what's missing here is that we need to get back to why we think we need what we want, and what that's going to benefit both the lake and the people that come up and use and experience the lake. These are the things that we need to put in place at Emerald Bay, in the South Shore, to improve the transit at the North Shore, and that has a cost. And then we need you, the two states, and maybe the federal government to come up with the money up front as to how we're going to pay for this. And then we will cover the cost of operation and maintenance and paying back what you have paid for through a fee process. And here's our suggestions. And then let the decision makers there who are providing us the money to decide how best they feel that they would pay off either the bonds or the revenue that they're providing us to cover that cost. And then how would it be administered? And if by saying entry fee, that would create a legal problem in Nevada, well, let's use the different term then. It's a user fee to pay for what we have just been given money for to operate at Lake Tahoe. Because after all, if you really get down to it, the two states and the federal government decided this basin deserves more protection in order to protect this unique geologic wonder, Lake Tahoe. And the communities around it deserve help to address the issues of the impact of so many users coming into the lake and how we protect that recreational experience and provide something for the future so that we don't kill the golden goose here, because it is I've seen in reports like a $5 billion revenue source. It benefits both states and probably the feds. So that's to me is the pitch that I've got. And a problem I've got with this presentation, and I don't blame the consultants because you're kind of rehashing a lot of stuff that everybody's kind of gone through. But I just want to put it up. Hey, this is what we think we need. We can't afford it, and we can't do it with your current funding process. Here's our need, and how are you going to pay for it? And then how do we pay it back? that's the way I would kind of put it to the two states and the federal government. And if they say no, then fine. This is a problem we're going to have, as with the funding that you give us, we'll have not a very good transit system. And we'll continue to have cars lined up at certain key times of the year and having difficulty getting into and out of the basin as a result of just more people around the basin that want to take advantage of it. So that's my comment more than a question, Jim.
No, thank you, Bill. I appreciate the comments. And there was a lot to unpack there for sure. I can't speak for the other board members, obviously, but my sense is there's a lot of philosophical agreement to everything you said. One of the things I heard from you kind of tied into Belinda's question about can we tease out infrastructure and transit operations? Because if I heard you correctly, Bill, you were saying, you know, we need to take a look at these priority projects and let's figure out a way to use federal or state dollars to capital improvement dollars to get the infrastructure in place. And then what's that long-term funding source for ongoing transit and transit operations? So I do think that there is a lot there, and I know it's been brought up in the past, so perhaps there's more work that we can do in that area. Thank you for the comments. Oh, the one thing I do want to, politely push back on, I'm just not a fan of changing words in order to make something fit legally. I usually crash and burn when I do that. I will say once again that we need to take a deeper dive on just what are the legalities, what are the specific things that need to be changed, basically get our game going a little bit. Let's really kind of talk more specifics on what are the mechanics that would take, whether for a corridor fee or a user fee or any of these others, like the local governments have eloquently talked about the difficulties with sales taxes and TOT taxes and those things. So I do know that the Tahoe Transportation District has looked into it, and I've heard at numerous board meetings that if we call it a user fee, it fits in well with Nevada. So perhaps there's not a lot of work that needs to be done, and maybe TTD's already answered this question, but I don't know if that's been shared with folks, the analysis. So perhaps it's already there, maybe not. Haley, I do want to make sure that you have a chance to speak as well.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, and thank you so much to the my fellow board members on this committee. I'm learning so much from all of you. The history and the expertise and how long you have all been working at this problem is pretty incredible. I have what I hope isn't a very naive question, and a huge apologies if it is. And this stems from when I found myself evacuated this summer. I spent some time in Mammoth, where I had never been before. And they have a phenomenal transit system there that was free. I didn't know, and I know at the last presentation we had studied other mountain towns. I didn't see Mammoth on there. So again, apologies if this is a silly question, but I started to look into where their funding came from. And they have different contracts with their ski resorts. Now I know that Tahoe is different. We have two states, multiple counties. Mammoth doesn't have these things. But I'm just wondering, Heavenly, Homewood, North Star, is this a funding source that's going on tickets? Is this something that we've looked into before? Sorry if we have, and this road has already been traveled, but it struck me as interesting that Mammoth was getting funding from the ski resorts, and this is still in summer when their transit's still free. So just a thought, if we've talked to the resorts and if that might be a source that we have or haven't discussed.
Hey, I can answer that, Haley, if you want. A bit, I don't know at all, but they are the model of what we call the TBID, the Tourism Business Improvement District, that Placer County used for that very reason, because sales tax is not collected on recreation activities, whether it's a boat rental, bike rental, jet ski, ski pass. Sales tax is not collected on any of those items. The TBID did assess those businesses with their agreement, and Mammoth was the first to do that, and then we were the second, I believe, to do that. which gets them, and they're very, most of the ski areas are very resistant to being charged a sales tax out of principle. They fight it nationwide. But the TBID, because it is in control of the business community, how those funds are used, that's part of the solution that Mammoth is using and why we chose it as our example. So, but they may have other contracts as well.
Thank you, Cindy, for giving us information. And you know, I think, look, you know, local governments have to struggle with this a lot. I'm familiar, I've used the Mammoth system, Haley, and I think it is pretty cool. I think one of the things that we do struggle with is, you know, and sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's hard. And in transportation, I think it's cut both ways. Local governments have all of their own autonomy, but they don't necessarily, you know, Cindy and Placer County funds things different with their tax and fees than perhaps maybe another local jurisdiction. I want to do a check here. So Julie, I know that in anticipation for depending on how the conversation may or may not go, there's additional slides. Do we want to go to the additional slides? Do you want to make comments now? Or do we want to continue this discussion here at this point?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Julie Reagan, TRPA. I appreciate this conversation a lot. I want to make a couple of comments, and then I can pivot back to Josh and to Bob for some wrap up. Excellent discussion. I wanted to clarify also what Jim said earlier about off the table, on the table. I mean, you are the policymakers, and this is your decision. What I wanted to clarify, what we're trying to do as staff is to bring you a package that we can move on, because we have a window that is shrinking in terms of a couple of years of time to start new money flowing. And what our professional assessment is, after a series of interviews and speaking with, you know, different members of the resources agencies in both states, we're just not hearing support today for a basin entry fee. And that is a difficult hurdle to overcome if legislation is going to be required. You know, having the two governor support for whatever package we develop is really crucial. So that's why we included more of a portfolio multi-sector approach. And there's two pieces I wanted to cover on that. Number one, we're talking about revenue needs, but we're also talking about visitor and car behavior change. You know, we're looking to build a better transit system, but we have to make sure that people change their behavior. So the interesting idea around zonal pricing and congestion management and cordon pricing, as we've talked about, is that you're actually starting, if we could build that as a pilot in both states, between the 28 corridor on the east side and Sand Harbor Way and the 89 corridor in Emerald Bay and Emerald Bayway, we've got like 3 million cars going through there every year. If we could start to change behavior where our visitors say, if I'm going to get in my car and go to those places, I'm going to have more restricted parking, I might have to pay to park, and I might have to pay an additional fee. We might start to shift behaviors, which reduces VMT, which is also our charge. Then in the process, we could collect additional revenue that could support a multi-sector approach to meeting that 20 million overall. So we haven't heard objections to that yet. That requires a lot more fleshing out. That requires legislation as well. But we wanted to see if we could get your head nod to kind of investigate that as a way forward. And that builds more time. If a basin entry is the ultimate solution, it will take time to work through our two states on that. And Member Hill, I appreciate your comments, and that is certainly, you know, up to you and your individual discussions at the various levels with the governors. But we are trying to look down the barrel of this couple of years to say, what can we do as a plan to get some money flowing into the basin? And so maybe cordon or zonal pricing is a way that we could come to some agreement and move forward in a pilot of some sort. So that's visitor behavior change and something creative that we could agree on while we investigate some of those other options. So that's number one. And the other piece is just really how we move this forward with your words, with TTD's, the Tahoe Transportation District. And we've been working in lockstep with Carl Hayes. I didn't want to miss the fact that we are working together with the policymakers at TTD and then all the technical implementers, you know, as well. So that being said, we're committed to keep working on this with your concurrence to try to thread the needle. I mean, this is a thread the needle exercise because otherwise we just keep churning and we're running out of time to churn. So I just wanted to throw that on the table in the mix and then go back to John and Bob. And I know we do, Mr. Chair, have some folks that probably want to make public comment. And so we've got about 20 minutes left. There may be a couple of slides that Josh and Bob want to run through before we get into that next phase of public comment. So really appreciate the discussion. This is exactly what we were hoping to get to, getting more into a tactical plan of how can we come to agreement to start some money flowing.
Thank you, Julie. And Josh and Bob, before I turn it off for the last couple of slides, and I do want to make sure the public comment is there. You know, again, I think, you know, it's time. We have been churning on this for a long time. And I my personal feeling is we have some space to ramp up our game. I think one of the things that perhaps why zonal fee kind of went out as an opportunity, but perhaps not basin user fee. You know, I've been around a long time. 2011, right before sign die, two bills passed that were extremely controversial. One was SB 271 to pull Nevada out of the compact. The second one was a Boulder City demonstration project for a toll road. So there might be something there to do some research because although that was controversial, kind of to your point, Julie, regarding corridors and demonstration projects, that bill did pass. I mean, it was a tough lift, I think, for proponents. I didn't follow it, but it did pass. Ultimately, it wasn't funded through toll roads that I found out through a little bit of my research over the weekend. They actually didn't build it for a toll. They actually then changed the fuel index pricing down south in order to cover the cost for that. And so we don't need to talk about that now, but I didn't see like fuel indexing or anything like that as a source. Maybe that's just not a possibility. Again, I just sometimes be like a dog with a bone with stuff, and that's what I was digging into over the weekend, looking at some of the history on this issue with Nevada. I think more work needs to be done because, again, I'm not a legal expert by any means. With that, you know, Josh or Bob, I'll turn for real quickly do a couple of slides, and I do want to make sure we have public comment. So,
thank you, Chair. I'll just jump in before Bob runs through these slides. I think you'll see that a couple of them, at least one of them, addresses the question of ongoing maintenance or operations costs for transit and capital costs. So that's useful. But I think just to follow up on this discussion, indeed, as consultants, you know, we're charged with, meeting the ask from our clients. And so we, I think, have done that here with kind of reflecting back on some of these issues. Obviously, the what Bob mentioned earlier, the political component is really, above our pay grade, but I think where a lot of this debate needs to occur, and perhaps, you know, that this presentation will motivate some of that further. But I think in terms of the idea of, you know, this zonal approach, you know, along with, behavior modification, I think one of the outcomes would, you know, there's three that I think would be particularly useful to address sort of within the context of a pilot project. Just the question of, you know, would people stop driving through Emerald Bay or State, Highway 28 there on the East Shore because they have to pay a small fee? And I think that would be really interesting study to look back after a year or two and see what kind of the pattern of use change there might be. Also, it would give us a chance to look into some of these questions around the equity topic, because I think those would also be revealed by use patterns. And then finally, you know, it would give a chance to explore and develop these state and federal partnerships that will be needed, because both of those zones have, you know, significant state and federal assets there. So I think all of these would contribute to what Joanne has talked about as sort of developing some muscle in terms of, you know, this collaboration across jurisdictions and entities to fund this transit. And I know it may not be satisfying given all of the prior work and challenges at the local level, but it may be the pragmatic way forward. And so I think with that, I would just ask Bob to run through the last couple slides we have to talk about some of these projects.
Thanks. Yeah, if you could hand the screen back to me and I'll proceed. Thanks very much for everybody's comments. We have some slides here on the expenditure plan. Let me just show my screen. Okay, there we go. And everybody, you know, we didn't want to dig into it to detail because of all we're covering on the revenue side, but this does address some of the committee's comments that have been brought up. There is an expenditure plan. It's highly detailed. There are some key priority projects that are highlighted there on the left of this slide that the committee is well aware of. We're just going to go through a couple of quick examples. On the expenditure plan, the Resort Triangle, you know, a bus priority lane project, put a lane in the middle so the bus can pass by all the traffic, dedicated transit lane, and make improvements at intersections so it can hop any intersection constraints. How's that funded? Largely, solely a capital project with a large share coming from the state and federal governments, and then a local share noted as well. The project also has key benefits for the RTP. It's got environmental benefits, congestion management benefits, connectivity benefits, and helping to preserve the system. So that's an example of where these funds would go, the benefits that users would see directly from any kind of whether it's a transportation user fee or other source of revenue. Another example, State Route 28, state line to state line bikeway. That would be completing the East Shore Trail from In-Kind Village to Spooner Summit, along with a bunch of other parking, pedestrian, and safety enhancements. That also is largely a capital project. It's got local state shares, as you can see. It's a $40 million project, but significant federal, state and federal share, as is, you know, typical of this color of money, you know, state and federal sources being funding more capital than operating. That tends to be where those sources go. This project hits all the points, all the performance measures in the RTP: environment, congestion management, connectivity, economic vitality, safety, system preservation. So this would ring all the bells, and we could talk about making you know, moving forward with the performance metrics across the entire RTP. Finally, transit around Tahoe. And this is a big one, and it's not going to happen all at once, be implemented over time. We've got to enhance workforce connections to help workers get in and out of the basin to work. As I mentioned, that's become a critical pain point in the last 12 months for many Tahoe businesses. We need micro transit to get for recreation services to get visitors and locals to those hot spots and just around town, and a new South Shore transit facility, which is a major capital investment. This is where we have the annual operation cost, and you can see this large local share. That's three odd million. That's per year, you know, so that's year in, year out, and that's where that ongoing funding is needed to support local operations, while the capital side, again, is more of a state and federal role. And this one would hit most of the metrics in the RTP around environment, congestion management, connectivity, and economic vitality. So again, this is just to remind the committee about all the hard work that's been done around the RTP, all the great projects that are in line, if we can find the funding and the performance metrics, you know, the benefits that we could point to if we can implement them. And then I'm just going to wrap up here with a slide on the governance and administration issue. And we're just introducing this month. Happy to take any initial comments. So this question of, you know, revenue adoption and collection, is it going to be uniform basin wide? Is it a single fee or is a single tax basin wide? Is it, on the other hand, maybe a bi-state solution is appropriate here? Maybe the California side moves in a different way than the Nevada side, but together they add up to a regional revenue contribution. Or do we stay, again, this would be more of a status quo approach with each jurisdiction having to come up with a contribution to the regional revenue needs. That's more or less where we are now. On the administration side, we've got questions about, you know, is this a TDD responsibility ultimately? The revenues would go to the Tahoe Transportation District. They'd be responsible for programming them. We did not get, a consensus in the interviews we had on that. So this is, again, where we need guidance from the committee. Next month, we can dig into this more detail as to where, you know, how administratively are we going to work with a new revenue source? If not the TDD, is it, again, going to stay kind of a status quo approach with local jurisdictions? They come up with the additional revenue. They decide how to program it. Or, you know, is it some combination? It's a regional source. And this is true in many of these regional revenue source programs, self-help tax programs, for example, where it's a regional source. It's going to, say, the regional transportation agency, but there is a return to source component so that every local jurisdiction gets a share of the funds for their local needs. So this is just to introduce the topic for you. We're going to have to dig into this into more depth next month. And finally, with our process and timeline, we've gotten through August. We're here in September now talking about funding options, the funding plans, and introducing the governance and administration issue. Next month, we're going to be wanting to make some decisions on funding, hoping that we can get there next month and dig in more deeply on governance and administration. In November, we'll wrap up the governance administration discussion so that in December we can have a draft report. So that's our timeline that we're looking at. It's a lot of work in a short period of time. I can appreciate the struggle this has been and the need to come together on something you've been working for many years now, and the challenge that poses. So that's it for us, Chair. I can wrap it up, take any final comments or questions, or we can move right to a public comment.
Thank you, Bob. Real quick question from me first. When you said administration, and you don't need to go back to it, I didn't see TRPA as an MPO as one of the possibilities. I'm naive in sort of how the administration works. I'm just curious, was that determined that it's just not appropriate, not an option? Was that looked at, or?
You know, that's a good question. I'll admit that we have not looked deeply into the, how TRPA would be positioned legally to do this. TRPA is a land use regulatory agency as well as a transportation planning agency. It's the MPO. Whether it would also have, right now it doesn't have Article 9 in the compact, does not address TRPA revenues. TRPA revenues in the compact are highly constrained to simply fees, regulatory fees. So it might require, opening up the compact in a larger way. So I guess it's not on there, Jim, for no other reason than we just haven't looked into it that closely. If that's an option you want to keep on the table, happy to make sure we cover that base for next month.
And Mr. Chair.
Oh, go ahead, Julie.
If I may, just to jump in again, Julie. Glad you flagged the question, Mr. Chair. It is complicated. because of the limitations in the compact on TRPA's ability to collect revenue, there is a question mark, but any change is most likely of a significant manner will require some legislative fixes. So that's something that you all can advise us on. We also, as the MPO, you have the responsibility wearing that in your decision-making to approve projects that get funded. So there is an involvement piece outside of the administration of any potential funds that this board, with the addition of the Forest Service, as the MPO would have. So, but that remains, again, a very big area of study that would have to get reconciled. But we'll flag it.
Thank you both. And again, it's mostly my curiosity, but I do think it is a question that could come up in the future. So just have an answer of why yes or no kind of checks that box and can move on to other things. So thank you.
Okay.
For both of that. What I'd like to do now is move into public comment, because we've been talking for a long time and the public hasn't had a chance to speak, if there are folks on the line. So Maria, I don't know if there's folks on the line or not, but if there are, this is a good time to open it up for public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have a public comment. Steve Teixeira, I've unmuted you, if you'd like to address the committee.
Thank you, Mari. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Steve Teixeira, regional transportation activist. I want to make it clear that I'm not speaking on behalf of any client that I represent, not the chamber, not anyone else. This is strictly my perspective and point of view as somebody that's been working on these issues, at least as long as Cindy, if not a little longer. I want to support the comments by the members of this committee who strongly encouraged you to not, quote, take the basin fee, user fee, off the table. I think that is critical to keep that in the mix. We know we have a huge need. The consultants' recommendations, I understand, appreciate the hard work they've done. And I know that when they go out and talk to people, there are not a lot of consensus points that they hear. But when you look at the $20 million and you look at cobbling together multiple sources, which are already known, it just doesn't get it done, particularly on the transit side and on the capital project side and matches for grants. So, and it doesn't, the consultants' recommendations as they stand as presented today sort of don't really deal with the resort triangle issue. Yes, you might have sales tax, for example, in Placer County, Washoe County, et cetera, but what about the town of Truckee? The town of Truckee's had representatives in this group on the technical side because they'd like to be a participant in it. And so it doesn't really deal with that. It doesn't deal with the issue that came through the One Tahoe report, which is how do you implement the zonal fee? I mean, it seems very confusing for visitors. You know, it's like, if I go here, I pay what? And I go there. It seems like a lot easier for people to understand. I go across the bridge, as an example, I pay this fee. And, you know, and so I think the zonal fee, while it may be more politically viable at the state level, I still see a problem with it as far as people getting around the region. The thing that's most disappointing is to hear that apparently the governor of California has put the kibosh on the entry fee or the user fee. And yet we're whipsawed by state regulations in California. We have the attorney general saying we have to reduce VMT. We have the state saying we need to reduce VMT. We need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And yet they can't see their way clear to help us. We started out in this process thinking that, you know, the states would recognize what we're trying to do. And that, as Mr. Yates said, you know, Mr. Yates really framed the arguments to the states quite well, I thought. You know, we're trying to do what you're asking us to do from a regulatory perspective. We need your help. The other part of the consultant recommendations is it doesn't really get to the visitor issue. The visitors are the ones causing the impacts. And yet this is focused on what can you do at the local level with the local people and the local tax base. So, you know, we're really missing the part of how we started out on this journey, which is to get a bigger, more visionary mechanism in place. So I really appreciate the robust fervor in which members of this committee urged that the entry fee or whatever the terminology is that stay in place and is further analyzed, that we need to deal with the resort triangle issue and we need to deal with the tremendous requirements that we have, which are appropriate for an environmental agency on reduction of VMT and reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. So I'll put some of these comments in writing, I think, to be helpful and to save time. But I really appreciated the comments of committee members today. And again, I thought Mr. Yates framed the arguments to the states quite well. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Maria, additional public comment?
Yes, next we have Gavin Feiger. Go ahead, Gavin.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, committee. Gavin Feiger, I'm commenting on behalf of the League to Save Lake Tahoe this morning. Darcy wasn't able to attend the entire meeting, but as you know, she and a lot of League staff are very engaged with this issue and the process.
Hi, this is Barbara Sagascam on the phone. I'll mute myself.
Go ahead, Gavin.
Thank you. Based on the discussion this morning, it seems like there is a lot more work that needs to be done. We were hopeful that the consultants chosen would have some innovative ideas and combine those into a multifaceted solution. We didn't see that. We have such high usership in Tahoe, it sure seems that we can find a way to capitalize on it in an equitable way. So we look forward to exploring innovative and realistic options with the consultants and this committee going forward, and hopefully we can do that quickly over the next couple of months. Thanks for the opportunity to chime in. That's it for today.
Terrific. Thank you, Gavin. Mari, additional comment?
Mr. Chair, it looks like we have no additional public comment.
Thank you, Maria. With that, I will close public comment on at this point. And then I'll and I've been muted. So are there any additional, we need to be mindful of time. Are there any additional comments that committee members would like to make on this item very quickly? Alexis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I hope that I didn't come off as aggressive to the consultants. I think that you're doing a really difficult job in trying to build consensus. I think I was just surprised by the slide that we weren't going to consider the basin entry fee, but it sounds like that's a possibility, and it sounds like the committee's open to that, which is great. And I would just say to the consultants and as well as the TRPA staff, please use us, your board members, for these engagement processes. I'm always telling my other board members, hey, you've got a commissioner who is really looking, you know, really cares about these issues on other different regional boards that I'm on, and you can include me in these discussions, and I can speak to my constituency, and I can speak to what the community wants. And so I would just ask that you use us if you can in these meetings, so we can support you and help with those political discussions. And like I said, I plan on doing some follow-up as well. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Alexis. Any other committee comments real quick before we move on? Bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. You called me on being a lawyer, and I didn't mean to suggest that we're just simply going to change some words to get around the problem with the entry fee if there's a legal issue or even a political issue in regards to that. But I do believe there's a disconnect, and I really appreciated from the consultant standpoint of how they did the last slides, which showed the value added of the projects split up in the various ways that you did. I think a way to proceed would be to take those that kind of approach to the projects, especially our priority projects, and show the value added and the costs. And then how, with the existing funds, these projects would or would not happen. And then maybe the way we would rank where we think there are funding opportunities, where Cindy could simply say, well, here's what we've added with TBID. And so you you begin to see that even with local help and creativity that can be done by El Dorado County or Placer County or wherever, the city of South Lake Tahoe, we're not going to quite get there. So when we talk about a regional source, it's either going to be the users pay for the system that the two states might help us build with the federal government, or it's some other means. But it's definitely going to have to come from somewhere other than the formulaic transportation funding process to treat the Tahoe Basin in a way in which the compact has set it up in order to deal with just the popularity on a hot day in California that you want to go to Lake Tahoe. So that's my pitch is in a future meeting, we would make the connection between the value added of these projects and how short we are with existing funds to reach it, and then a priority of how we get there.
Thank you, Bill. Personally, I agree 100% and had some of those conversations with others on that as well. In my opinion, not all of these projects, equally address, some of the challenges we have with sustainable recreation or reduction of VMTs. Some are more sustainable recreation oriented, some are more VMT reduction oriented. And I think it's really important, it's probably impossible to quantify, but I think it's really important to kind of be able to articulate in more detail the qualitative on how it improves and moves the needles in those two areas. So I agree. Any other committee members? Cindy.
Thanks, Jim. Just a couple wrap-up comments. Heard our public comment on this. I do want to again thank the consultants. It's great to think there's innovative ways to deal with transportation and other, out of the box thinking. And I appreciate that. But when we're talking about real dollars on operating systems capital projects, I think there's many places in the states that have already tried those innovative solutions. And this is what we're coming up with. Unfortunately, so often in government, our hands are tied. So two points I just want to make sure we capture is there should be a nexus from the fee we collect to who is benefiting. And so TOT is certainly, our overnight visitors are certainly part of our traffic, but there's an awful lot of day visitors. So we've got to figure that out. And often our locals don't feel that those people are paying in adequately. So that's part of the rub we have on local elections on sales tax. And I think the political reality of if we're going to require legislative changes anyway, are the states going to allow us to do that? And are the governor's offices going to get behind those other legislative initiatives to allow us to do these other types of funding that may or may not have a direct nexus to traffic, but, certainly, if we can raise money there, then maybe we can free up other money that's going to other places at the local jurisdiction level. So just wanted to make sure as we move forward, we're talking about their legislative support on other avenues if the basin entry fee isn't one.
Thank you, Cindy. Those are really good comments. Again, this is just my opinion, my perspective, on the consultants, presenting that, it's not a not supported by either governor office in California and Nevada. I think it would make a mistake to couch the political issue as solely a governor issue. I mean, certainly there are state legislatures that represent these different counties that have the same political concerns as well. So I just want to throw that out there as food for thought and just caution folks to just kind of put it on the shoulders, the political quagmire, just to put it on the shoulders of the governor, because I don't necessarily think that's 100% accurate. Again, that's just my opinion. So any other committee comments? Seeing none, I will close that agenda item and then move to a redundant item. What appears item three is just general committee member comments outside of this agenda topic. Seeing none, we'll move on to agenda item number four, which is the last opportunity for public interest comments regarding topics that weren't talked about on the agenda. So, Mari, are there any additional public interest comments?
Mr. Chair, there are no further public comments.
Terrific. Thank you, Maria. With that, let's move to agenda item number five, which is adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
All right. All in favor? Say aye.
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 We're adjourned.